The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart Family Cards. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or whether you should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart. And then share the meals in the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
You've got mail.
Hi, I'm Millie Tamaris.
And I'm Elise Morales.
And this is Go Touch Grass, the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Elise and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this pod, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can literally do anything else.
Literally anything else. And if you like what you hear today and you want to hear more, we've got a Go Touch Grass Patreon already up and running with all of our test episodes, mini trending topics, a weekly newsletter, and a spinoff series, Search History, where we go back and break down a viral discourse from the past. We've got an episode up this week about Pop the Balloon on TikTok, yes, but I guess also YouTube. Millie taught me all about Pop the Balloon. If you already love Pop the Balloon, you should listen to it. If you don't know about Pop the Balloon, that episode is there for you to learn.
Well, Elise, would you go on Pop the Balloon?
You know, I don't think I don't want that direct feedback of why someone doesn't want to date me. I just don't like.
Yeah,
I don't need to hear them be like, fuck ass Bob or whatever. Like,
yeah. Fair.
I am happy. I
also agree.
I'm like very happy to just receive the it's not working out text and not ask any follow-up questions.
Awesome. I agree. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review, guys.
Beautiful.
We love your reviews. We need more of them. We want as much as we can get. But literally the best review you can give is to tell your friends all about our podcast. Absolutely. We're trying to grow our little podcast. And the word of the mouth is the best. You hear my voice. Mm-hmm. My voice is fucked up.
Let's address the elephant, the raspy elephant in the room.
My voice is fucked up because I was in my college reunion this weekend. Mm. It's a lot of karaoke, a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, a lot of loving. But one of my favorite things, one of the things that touched me the most, is hearing my friends from college tell other people how much they love the podcast, how much they learned, how important it is that they learned about Hocktua.
It is important. And you know what? There has been so much Hocktua. I mean, I had to add into the podcast new Hocktua developments. This meme is continuing.
This meme is going places. And we're here for you.
We'll get into it, but I did text you yesterday that I saw a conservative commentator tweet a meme of Hocktua spitting on the guy who shot Trump.
Yeah, that's like, have you ever seen those Calvin and Hobbes stickers?
It was very that. It's like,
yeah, like Calvin and Hobbes, like Calvin will be pissing on something and like it'll be like it'll be a Chevy owner that's pissing on the Ford logo, whatever. But one time I walked by a car that had Calvin pissing on the word cancer. And I was like, yeah, I guess we should piss on cancer.
Yeah, like, fucked I guess up. I don't disagree. Like, Hocktua on cancer, I guess.
Cancer.
Okay.
Yeah.
As you guys may have noticed, we don't have a guest today. We're actually doing our first ever virtual recording.
Yes.
New frontiers every week on the podcast.
Yes. I'm in LA.
Yeah.
That's
Millie's in LA.
New for me.
I'm gonna join her in LA, and you guys have, we have such like amazing guests and fun
guest coming
episodes
up.
Planned for when we're in LA, but this episode's also gonna be fun because it's just us girls, and
just the girlies.
I did want to kick us off bringing back our blockbuster segment. What are they talking about? I told you a while ago I had a what are they talking about, and I'm excited to share this one with you.
And in true what are they talking about fashion, I did not peek. I don't know.
Millie doesn't know.
I'm going in blind. Going okay. in blind.
So Millie, this is a tweet from at Bubby's Kid. And the tweet says, it's in response to something, as per usual with this segment. No idea what the quote rainbow has to do with it being Thursday. Can we go back to a day without any virtue signaling? What do you think at Bubby's Kid is talking about?
I want to say it might be like a rainbow sale for the clothing store. So
really
they might
guess.
Be taking like a fast fashion like clothing store and saying that it's for Pride. But that's my guess.
Really, really, really good guess. Millie, you can now open the tweet that's in your doc. What are they talking about? She's responding to LeVar Burton, the host of Reading Rainbow.
Oh my God.
Saying happy Thursday, y'all, with a gif of him doing the Reading Rainbow rainbow.
Okay.
So literally had nothing to do with Pride at all. It is just a Reading Rainbow related tweet. And this woman responded. And my favorite thing about it is that all of the replies are people explaining to her, like, hey, this literally has nothing to do with Pride or LGBTQ rights at all. It's about a show called Reading Rainbow. And all of her responses to them are like, open your eyes, sheep. They're everywhere. Like, she will not hear that this is just literally LeVar Burton being like, Reading Rainbow.
My favorite, I see somebody said, why do you follow an account when you know nothing about the guy? And she wrote, I know much about him. I don't have to bow to him, do I? It's like, what?
Literally just LeVar Burton, like the sweetest man, trying to be like, have a happy Thursday. But now these people can't even see a rainbow. It's bizarre.
But we're the snowflakes.
Of course. It's interesting that we're in a place where people will see a rainbow and have such a strong reaction at this point, like that they can't even separate rainbows from Pride. They can't separate the rainbow from the artist, but that's a win for the gay community, I think.
I really thought it was rainbow, the fast fashion thing, but it's even funnier.
I was like, it's close. It's close because it is just, like, the essence of it is true, which is that it's someone just seeing the word rainbow and immediately thinking it has to do with Pride or like queer liberation, when it is truly actually just rainbow, the thing that is a rainbow.
You know what? I'll say this. It's Randy Rainbow's fault.
Randy Rainbow, we're here to hold you accountable.
Well, you know I'm blocked by Randy Rainbow on Twitter, right?
Are you blocked by Randy Rainbow?
I'm blocked by Randy Rainbow. I am blocked by Randy Rainbow. Randy Rainbow blocked. Like, there's a thing where, like, I don't want to be like Darren Criss and say I'm part of the queer community, but I'm not queer. Or like, I love queer culture, but people do book me on queer comedy shows, and then I have to be like, love the cause, love it all, but I don't want to take any space as a non-queer person. But there was a day where Randy Rainbow blocked a lot of queer Brooklyn comedians in one day, and I was a part of that.
Wow.
So I'm like, didn't help.
I will. I mean, that definitely does give you a lot of, I would say, cred.
Come out.
Ally cred for sure that Randy Rainbow said, we're blocking Millie as well.
And you know whose fault it was? Former guest of the pod, George Tavares.
Wow. So I would assume George is blocked by Randy Rainbow as well.
So Randy Rainbow tweeted something. George tweeted like a response saying you're stupid. And then I tweeted to George being like, no, you don't get the joke. And I like very sarcastically explained it to George, even though the joke was obvious. And we both got blocked.
Wow. Okay. So very Katy Perry, this is satire-esque. I don't know if you've been following the Women's World rollout, but Katy Perry has pulled a it was a skit on a global scale.
Elise, you're not reading the newsletter because, baby, I wrote about it in the newsletter. You can get for $1 a month.
I do read the newsletter, but I like to, for the free feed people.
Yeah. Okay.
Present a front as if.
Yes.
But this is behind the scenes. Yes. We have covered in our newsletter, which you can get for every week for $1 a month, which is kind of crazy.
That's 25 cents.
A newsletter.
A newsletter.
And sometimes we have to scramble to do this thing.
Yeah, no. I would say every week I have to do it, I scramble.
I also am frequently scrambling to do the newsletters. So give us that quarter.
We need it.
Should we get into the discourse?
So our discourse this week, you know, and again, apologizing for our voice, my voice.
I like you saying our as if it's like the way the queen does it, where she's like, our voice is raspy today.
Or just like the point of view of the pod.
Yeah, exactly. The royal pod we.
The royal pod we. Okay, so the discourse this week is centered on Olivia Coppel versus gown-eyed girl.
I'm excited. So, this is going to be a wedding-heavy episode.
So wedding-heavy episode.
Some politics.
So I know. Some politics thrown in. I'll say this, you know, I'm now married. The institution of marriage, questionable, whatever. Blase, blase. But this is a wedding-heavy episode.
This is a wedding-heavy episode. And I think it's good that we have representation from married and not married community to weigh in on these very important issues that we're going to be talking about.
So, yes, let's meet the cast of characters in this feud.
Okay.
Olivia Frances Coppel, born May 8th. Taurus alert. already off rip. Being a Taurus, toxic. I'm kidding.
I'm like,
toxically stubborn.
Down to earth. But also materialistic. Anyway, read my astrology book where I rose to the signs.
Yes. Olivia Frances Coppel is an American beauty pageant title holder. And after winning Miss Rhode Island USA, she went on to win Miss USA in 2012 and then Miss Universe in 2012. So she's out here. Coppel became a social media personality after gaining a significant following on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. She has 5.5 million followers on Instagram, 797,000 followers on TikTok, 220,000 followers on Twitter.
Wow.
I had 2.1 million followers on Facebook. Just checked it. Wow.
Okay.
People are following her on Facebook. Follow us on Facebook.
Yeah.
We're trying. She's partnered and collaborated with several beauty and fashion brands. And as an influencer, Coppel was featured in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. In 2018, she appeared on the reality TV show Model Squad. Mm. And Coppel had roles in the films The Other Women, I Feel Pretty, Reprisal, and Venus as a Boy.
I only know I Feel Pretty. That's the one where Amy Schumer gets hit on the head and thinks that she's
hot.
And because she's crazily a size 10. Thinks that she's hot, even though she's a mid-size woman.
Yeah, she's a size 10. And size 10 blonde white women had to have a concussion to think that she's attractive. Great. Love it. Whatever. In 2023, this is my most important fact about her. Coppel competed in season 9 of The Masked Singer as, quote, UFO after besting Alicia Witt as Dandelion and Melissa Joan Hart as Lamp in Masked Singer in Space. She was eliminated in the quarterfinals.
Are you a Masked Singer person?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I've never engaged with Masked Singer, but like I'm always receiving Masked Singer news where it'll be like, Olivia Coppel was UFO. Melissa Joan Hart was Lamp. And I'm like, what is going on? I actually prefer it that way, to just like to not know anything about the show, but just see like, uh-oh, Sarah Palin was the oven mitt. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. It just, to age myself with millennial coded memes, it's giving I love desk, I love lamp.
Yes.
From Anchorman.
Anchorman.
Okay. So let's talk about her reality show. So Olivia Culpo and her sisters had tried a reality show on TLC called The Culpo Sisters. I'm going to read the synopsis or like the log line or whatever. With their larger-than-life personalities, the Culpo sisters take L.A. by storm. They use small-town charm and playful antics to stand out in the ultra-competitive world of content creation while navigating love, heartbreak, and fierce sibling rivalry.
Okay.
So she has two sisters that are also influencers, but the show's trying to be like the Kardashians. But the show does have a 4 out of 10 on IMDb. And a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. So one Rotten Tomatoes review, and it was on TLC, like I said. Rotten Tomato review had this to say about the show. And this was by reviewer City T. Says,
shout him out.
Shout him out. What a weird choice for TLC. Why would their viewers who love 90 Day Fiancé and 1,000-Pound Sisters be at all entertained by this? The Culpo sisters are totally unrelatable. And super boring. Having a lot of social media followers does not equate to good TV.
True. It's a read. Because the thing about the 1,000-Pound Sisters is that they are watchable. Sorry. Sorry. The 1,000-Pound Sisters are fun.
They're 1,000 pounds and they're dating and they're living and they're laughing and they're loving.
Culpo I've actually never watched 1,000-Pound Sisters, but I've seen clips.
Okay. So, Olivia Culpo married NFL running back Christian McCaffrey on June 29, 2024. Mm-hmm. The wedding was in Rochelle, Rhode Island. If you don't know who Christian McCaffrey is, he's known by the initial CMC, and he's an American football running back for the San Francisco 49ers of the NFL.
Okay.
This is Danny Facts, which is, I'm saying, like, kind of boring sports facts. Mm-hmm. McCaffrey holds numerous NFL and Panthers franchise records. McCaffrey was traded to the 49ers in 2022 and was named the Offensive Player of the Year a year later after leading the league in scrimmage yards and touchdowns en route to an appearance in the Super Bowl. A member of the McCaffrey football family is the son of Ed and brother Max Dillon and Luke. I guess if you know anything about football, which I don't, and at least probably doesn't,
no, Danny will try to give me information, and I can retain information about the people, but not like the gameplay or like anything of that nature.
So one of my favorite podcasts, Who Weekly, they have a segment about Olivia Culpo and Christian McCaffrey, and they call it Crolivia. It's really funny. If you want more information about like the day to day of them, like definitely check out Who Weekly.
Absolutely.
But we're getting big picture because we're going to talk about this feud.
Yeah. And okay. I do feel that Olivia will come up for us again, but
she will.
Full history on Crolivia, definitely. We must send you to Who Weekly, which is a great podcast.
Great podcast. The North Star for us. We love it. Yeah. Okay. Who is Gown-Eyed Girl? Kennedy Bingham, a.k.a. Gown-Eyed Girl, is a stylist, content creator, and bridal expert based in Los Angeles. She started Gown-Eyed Girl in 2020 as a way to showcase the diversity and innovation in bridal she felt wasn't being highlighted. It has since grown into a brand that is dedicated to pushing the boundaries of what we think as bridal and empowering all kinds of brides to embrace the expression of love that feels most true to them. She has 97,000 followers on Instagram, 1.2 followers on TikTok. 1.2 million followers on TikTok. Yes. Sorry. Sorry, guys.
Imagine having
1.2
followers on TikTok. It's just like your mom.
It's like you. It's like your mom and like a half bot. Yeah. Kennedy is passionate. So this is from her website. Kennedy's passionate about connecting with brands and brides who view bridal as a form of expression, not a role set with outdated societal constraints. She has loved working with brides of all backgrounds and learning how different identities can affect the overall wedding process. Gown-Eyed Girl truly believes there is no right way to be a bride. Kennedy has worked with BIPOC brides, LGBTQ brides, male brides, brides who don't believe in the institution of marriage, and opt for long-term partnerships, and many more. She's loved every second of it. Kennedy is just a gown-eyed girl who believes that all you really need to get married is someone to love and something to wear.
Oh.
So, what are our thoughts so far of the characters in this story? What are we thinking? What are we feeling?
Olivia Culpo is very, like, nothing burger to me. Like,
yeah.
She just reads as kind of, there's this, like, world of Gen Z influencer girlies. Who are those other sisters that are famous that also tried to do a reality show? I don't even know. But, like, Alex Earle, all these, like, girls that are famous for, like, the dances and shit, they all just kind of, like, morph into one, like, blob for me that is, like, doesn't offend me, but also doesn't mean anything to me. And then Gown-Eyed Girl, I'm like, I love it. Great. Build that brand on, you know, trying to expand what, like, it means to have a wedding and take down the wedding industrial complex and all of that shit. Like, again, as someone who has planned a wedding, it is crazy the amount of stuff that the industry will try to convince you is, like, needed, and just the upselling and all of that stuff and, like, the expectations on it are so intense that I do think it's good to have someone who's there just to be like, all you need is someone to marry and something to wear.
Yeah, it's like all the pressures of, like, what is happening? Like, you know, what's the dress and what does this mean and all that stuff. Like, I can imagine it gets daunting. And yeah, like, so
the D'Amelio sisters. I'm so sorry. That D'Amelio's. Is the name of the. Those are the sisters that I was trying to think of before. Like, those people all, like, kind of morph into one person for me. And, like, I don't hate them or love them, they just don't mean anything to me.
So let's get into the feud. So again, Olivia got married on June 29th, 2024. And they, on July 1st, there was an article up on Vogue that says, ooh, inside Olivia Culpo and Christian McCaffrey's classic New England wedding by Elise with an E.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Taylor. Elise with an E will come up again.
We'll read this quote. On Saturday, they married at the 150-year-old Watch Hill Chapel, and Olivia wore a Dolce & Gabbana long-sleeve crew-neck crepe ball gown with a voluminous skirt and button-lined back. Quote, this is from Olivia. I didn't want to exude sex in any way, shape, or form, she says of the dress. I wanted it to feel effortless, as if it was complimenting me, not overpowering me. There's so much beauty and simplicity. She wore her hair down in a simple middle part and skipped mascara, lip liner, and eyebrow makeup. So the internet had a lot of stuff to say, but specifically Gown-Eyed Girl, Kennedy Binghamton, had a lot to say.
I have been a bridal creator for 4 years now, and I've never said this before, but I do not like this wedding dress. Olivia Culpo just got married, and this is a great example of how fashion is so much more than just what you see on the surface. When you see fashion, especially wedding dresses discussed on social media, you usually just end up hearing about whether or not the person talking likes the way that it looks, which is extremely subjective. Like this dress, for example, if I were to just look at the dress, I would see a beautiful bride in a beautiful, simple, elegant dress. If we stopped there at just the way the dress looks, we'd really have nothing to say. But it's all the stuff surrounding the dress that leaves kind of a bitter aftertaste. She said two things. First of all, she says, I didn't want to exude sex in any way. The second thing she says is she wanted the dress to be as serious as she takes the covenant of marriage. Now listen, there is nothing wrong with wanting a modest wedding dress or just modest attire in general. But the way that she was talking about this went beyond just wanting something modest for herself and pushing this idea of what she thinks all brides should look like. First and foremost, you could get married in your underwear and be taking your marriage vows very seriously. What you wear on your wedding day has almost nothing to do with whether or not you're gonna have a long and happy marriage. I also have a big issue with the terminology of not wanting to exude sex with what you're wearing, because in an oxymoronic way, it is both your choice and not your choice to exude any amount of sex no matter what you're wearing. Let me explain, because it's kind of confusing. First, First of all, the choice of exuding sex. I could wear something and on me, it looks super modest, and on another person, it looks really risque because we are all different people and the way we carry ourselves has a lot to do with the amount of like sex and confidence we're exuding. But on the flip side, it has been documented that it does not matter what women wear, they will be sexualized if someone wants to sexualize them. So to treat this as if like this is a sexless design is really odd to me because both it is your choice if you do not want to exude sex in this gown, but also if people want to sexualize you, it is not your fault if they do that. Her two statements next to each other are a very eloquent way of saying that you are asking for whatever you are dressed as, which is an extremely harmful way of thinking. I also just think it's so weird how much she talks about coverage, especially as someone who in her day-to-day life is not exactly a modest dresser. She even says that her husband thinks she's the most beautiful when she's timeless, covered, and elegant. I just think the usage of the word covered is so icky because you are not covered in day-to-day life. And also, why is he thinking that you're the most beautiful when you're covered? That's such an odd thing. All celebrity weddings will have a little bit of marketing sprinkled in there. I just think it's really odd that instead of marketing herself, she's like marketing and pushing this conservative agenda. But let's like take the politics and everything aside, because there's other things that she mentioned in the article that kind of induce an eye roll from me. First, she says what sealed the deal for her is that when she went on the internet, there was nothing out there like this dress. Hun, it's a high neck, long sleeve white dress. I think I could walk into any bridal shop and find you like three of these. This Leah DeGloria gown is almost like an exact replica. I went on Pinterest for about 5 minutes and found all of these. Any bridal designer worth their salt could have designed this dress in their sleep. The main reason why you don't see a lot more brides in this exact dress is because it usually doesn't make it past the muslin stage in the designer showroom. There is no personality in this dress. Usually wedding dresses will have something of the bride injected into it, whether it's like a little bit of beading, some jewelry, detailing, something. This is just nothing. It's the absence of personality, and really the only thing about the dress that it seems like she really wanted was to be head to toe fully covered. But it isn't like we haven't seen gorgeous modest dresses before, like Paris Hilton, Miranda Kerr, Lily Collins, pretty much any hijabi bride that's ever existed. But for some reason, I have a feeling that this isn't the kind of modest that Olivia Colpo and Christian McCaffrey were talking about. Even the designer, if you wanted timeless, elegant, classic, why wouldn't you work with someone like Chanel, Dior, even like Louis Vuitton? Nope, you went with Dolce & Gabbana, who is not someone who's known for modesty and also is kind of one of the worst people ever. Stefano and Dolce & Gabbana in general have participated in every ism and phobia that you can think of. From this super racist campaign that they doubled down on, to saying that gay people should like not be allowed to adopt and calling IVF children synthetic, randomly calling Selena Gomez ugly, these super racist earrings that they wore down their runway in 2013. In fact, there's like so many things that they've done. There's a comprehensive timeline of every offensive comment that they've ever made. But honestly, they probably made more sense then because this is an older article. It's very clear that this was not a wedding. This was a conservative campaign. And it wasn't even well done. Olivia Colpo is a huge influencer. People were waiting for her wedding dress for like so long. And if you really wanted to push a conservative agenda, all you had to do was make it seem appealing. But instead you took this disingenuous pick-me route that honestly felt more like you were thinking about your narrative than you were about your actual marriage. She told Vogue she prefers to go more natural, so she didn't wear mascara or eyebrow gel on her wedding day. Sweetness, you didn't wear it because you have a lash lift, lash extensions, and eyebrow lamination. You would think someone who's saying that they wanted to take their wedding vows really seriously would focus more on the union that they're having rather than trying to push this notion of what they think brides should or should not look like on their wedding day.
I mean, points were certainly made by Gown Eye Girl.
Yes.
I think, well, the I don't want to exude sex comment did hit me in a weird way because it is like, I don't know, there's like an inherent judgment in there, right? Against like brides who do decide that they want to get a sexy wedding dress, which, you know, again, like after having gone through the wedding process, the biggest like feeling I came away is just like, it's such a personal experience that, like, I became 1,000% less judgmental of other people's weddings, what other people do with weddings, etc., because I'm just like, you should look exactly how you want to look. You should wear whatever you want to wear. And so I do feel like there's a way to say, I really wanted a modest gown without that, like, because I don't want to be, like, sexual on my wedding day. And then the other thing that just really surprised me is that the gown really is very plain. My wedding dress was not like a full silhouette, but I don't hate the idea of like a high-necked gown or long sleeves or the full silhouette, but I was just genuinely surprised at like how plain it was. And even in the Gown Eyed Girl video, when she gave examples of other gowns that were modest and like the same silhouette, all of them had like a little extra something, like a puff something, on the sleeve. Maybe some lace, some beading, something. And it was just very, very plain. I agree that it's a gown you could kind of find anywhere, which is also fine. It's fine if you want to wear a gown that could be found anywhere, whatever your gown is. But don't say like, oh, I have the most unique gown. And then it's this. And then also, I had forgotten that Dolce & Gabbana were as problematic as they are. And then it's like, oh, right. Yeah. No, they're like the most problematic designers that there are.
Yeah. The exude sex comments were even more weird when you saw what she wore for her cocktail dress. Have you seen her cocktail dress?
No.
The cocktail hour dress. So I'm gonna send you the link right now. I'll drop it in the doc so you can live react to it, because it is something.
Okay, yeah. I mean, this is an extremely different vibe, and it's very bizarre. It's like a, it almost looks like she's like in cabaret. Like she's wearing, it's like a little corset and then a netted full skirt. I will put a picture of all of this up on the Instagram when this episode comes out so that you can look, because yeah, she's like not wearing, she's like wearing visible underwear, kind of.
She's wearing like a bodysuit.
Yeah. So that is, I mean, I wouldn't call this exuding sex either, because I think that she looks like she works at like an Alice in Wonderland themed restaurant. But it's
or like
not
a
modest.
Themed cabaret. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it looks like she's in the Eddie Redmayne cabaret. Like there's a lot going on. And she has this weird choker. It's a strange choice. Look, but I actually, honestly, between this and the wedding dress,
I like this better.
I know. Yeah.
I like this better.
At least this has like personality and is fun. Yeah. And like we're doing something here.
Yeah, exactly. I don't hate it, but I'm just like, not after you said all this weird conservative shit.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, so, and like a lot of people, again, had problems with the makeup comments. So we'll
right,
get to that later.
No,
we'll
that's get to so that later, true. But. Yeah, like her being like, well, I'm not wearing mascara. And it's like, yeah, but you have a full, you have mink lashes, like, and your brows are tinted and laminated. So, yeah, you don't have makeup on.
So let's go to like, now, again, that video that we just shared had about over half a million likes, a ton of views. It went super viral. So now we're going to the backlash. Olivia responded. She commented on the video. Wow, what an absolutely evil person you are. I hope no one ever tears you apart in this way, because it's extremely hurtful. I love this dress and it was everything I wanted and more. And then Christian McCaffrey commented as well. And he said, what an evil thing to post online. I hope you can find joy and peace in the world the way my beautiful wife does. So
evil is a very strong word. I would say evil is strong to you.
Yeah, so people call that out. But also, Copel goes on to say that millions of people wear Dolce. Like, she's not the only one. Like, not everyone who wears Dolce. I guess the thing is, like, millions of people wear Dolce. That doesn't mean that they're sexist or racist or anything. So there's that.
I also think there is a fundamental difference between wearing Dolce & Gabbana and working with them on a wedding dress that is, like, custom designed for you and, like, is going to be featured in Vogue and all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Would I respond? It's tough because I Olivia Culpo is a human, and I understand on a human level having your feelings hurt that someone said your wedding dress is like boring, basically.
Yeah.
So I don't 100% falter for responding at all, though I do think when you're an influencer on that level and like your wedding's in Vogue, you do have to kind of like steel yourself against the fact that people who are in the wedding industry are going to comment on your dress and all of that stuff. But also at the same time, like, if you're an influencer in the wedding industry and you're going to get online and say somebody's wedding dress is boring, that person might respond. So I have a little grace for her, like, responding at all, because, like, weddings are so personal, and, like, I think her feelings were hurt by the video. But to call it evil is so intense. To also have Christian McCaffrey respond is so intense. And I personally think if you're gonna respond at all, just be like, damn, I loved my dress. This hurt my feelings or something.
Yeah, not exactly.
Like, you're evil. I work with Dolce and it's fine. Like you, if you're going to respond, you have to really craft your response in a specific way. And I think truly just go with the angle of like, this is hurting my feelings.
Yeah. So let's go to the backlash, because okay, then we're going to get into like the bigger thing. So the fact that millions of people wear it, like you said, there's a difference between wearing it and working with them. And that's the point that Bingham or Gown Eyed Girl said, is like, they're not just a designer to you. This is her quote. They're your coworkers. I'm not saying you're anything. I'm saying your actions allude to a certain mindset that you aren't doing anything to contradict. So basically, it's like, it's one thing if you buy a dress from Dolce & Gabbana. That doesn't necessarily mean your race, whatever. But again, if you know you're going to have a Vogue spread and you get them to make it, and like you're an influencer with 5 million followers, that means something. And it means that like you're okay with what they say or you just don't care.
The other thing too is like, it shows that you don't care. If you're going to have your wedding in Vogue, it means one thing. And also if you're going to have your wedding in Vogue, also with all this weird language around like modesty on your wedding day and not being sexy and all, like, I think Gown Eyed Girl's overall point was about this kind of conservative, like, posturing to the wedding too, that hiring Dolce & Gabbana also feeds into.
So Elton John called for Dolce & Gabbana to be canceled in 2015 because Dolce & Gabbana both made comments against gay parenting and they're racist and all this stuff. But like specifically, they're homophobic in a way that's really fucked up. So that's just one of the many things that did not vibe
like two
with
fashion guys. But I mean, whatever, like people are like that all the, like people are hypocrites, but it's like very weird to be like two men in fashion and like your thing is being homophobic.
But it seems like they're racist and fat, but like every kind of ism, which again, you know, is Gown Eyed Girl's brand, is like, that's kind of her niche, is like embracing and highlighting alternative weddings. So like her talking about people who are embracing like the more modern and doing this conservative posturing, she will comment on it, you know? The backlash of the backlash also is, again, you're saying you're natural, but, you know, you do Botox, you do filler, you have lashes, whatever. She goes back and she says, like, Olivia went, like, and I don't have lashes. Okay, but you got a lash lift and tint. Like, so it's like these things where it's like, I don't wear a corset, but it's like, okay, but you got lipo. You know, and it's like the same kind of thing. It's totally in her realm, in a Gown Eyed Girl's realm, and it's totally fair game because, again, it's not like it's a private ceremony and a picture got leaked, quote unquote. She did a Vogue spread.
Yeah.
And people are going to have questions. She said some pretty like controversial, judgmental things that seem to target other brides. So she can't get mad that people are commenting. My final point is that the backlash of the backlash is that Gown Eyed Girl was like, listen, I said that you partnered with a racist, transphobic, homophobic company and all you're coming back to me, or like the thing that bothered you was about your lashes. What say you, Elise?
What say I? I say similar. I say, I think, okay, number one, if your wedding's in Vogue, you do have to steel yourself against the fact that like wedding influencers, which is like a whole genre of this world, are going to talk about your wedding and they're going to say what they liked or disliked. If you are putting your wedding in Vogue, that's going to happen. If you don't want that to happen, don't put your wedding in Vogue. Number two, if you are going to respond to one of these people and that person has also said something about you working with a racist brand, I do think you gotta throw in there, I don't agree with any of the stuff that Dolce & Gabbana said. I just wanted to work with them as designers. I don't personally think that's like a great response, but you do have to say something. Like if you're going to be like, you said my dress is ugly, you said I don't have real lashes, and then just not address the third point is also makes you look really dumb. So I feel like you do have to throw in there, I support all people or something. Give us an I support all people. Give us an all lives matter.
Yeah, like there. Even like a fake one, even like whatever, like, come on.
If you're going to respond at all, you have to, and you're going to respond to specific points, you have to respond in totality. Or you do what I said before, which is just be like, dang, this hurt my feelings. Which again, I don't think is a great, I don't think any of the responses are a great move. I think the only good move is to not respond and send to your friends and be like, this girl's so mean, or like, this hurt my feelings, or like, tell your
or like, say like, this girl's evil, fuck her, like in your group,
in
chat.
Your group chat.
But publicly, I agree.
Yeah. Talking about things that should be said in the group chat is actually a very good transition into our Polita TikTok, unless you have more on this discourse.
I mean, that's it, basically. Olivia Coppola is, she could, like, I don't know, you know, people ask me, is she going to be the grasshole? She's not displaying too online. She commented once or maybe a few times, but, like, she's not posting through it.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it needed to be discussed. And we're discoursing.
It needed to be discussed. And we're discoursing, but that's it.
Yeah.
I want to hear about the group chat. Let's go.
Okay. Okay. So, speaking of things that maybe should be kept in the group chat, we have a Polita TikTok today. You could potentially guess what it's about.
What could have possibly happened?
What could we possibly have to talk about in politics? All right. Y'all, on Saturday, a 20-year-old white male named Thomas Matthew Crooks shot at Donald Trump at his rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. Before we discuss the topic further, I do think we should say where and how we heard this news. I'll start. I was literally dicking around on the Go Touch Grass Twitter, looking at tweets, and immediately saw it the moment that it happened and was like, fuck. And Danny was taking a shower, and I went and I opened the door to the shower and was just like, hey, somebody shot at Trump. He's okay, but it's not good. And then went back to my laptop.
Well, I was again on my college campus, and I just took a beautiful hike in the canyons, and I was in this beautiful gazebo surrounded by flowers with my friends. I got a text from you that said, someone shot at Trump. ... Not good. So you're doing a lot, Elise. You're doing a lot.
Millie was literally touching grass, and I was literally not touching grass. And as a result, that's how the news got to us.
That's how the news got to us.
I will say that because I was truly looking at a computer the moment that it happened, I was the person who told a good number of people about it. And I
because it was a Saturday afternoon, too. Like,
right?
Was like, you know, if it happened during the day, I feel like more, you wouldn't be that person, but Saturday afternoon, people are touching grass.
Except me. Except not me. Except you. And that's what's important, is that one person.
That's why we make this pod.
Yeah, exactly. One of the hosts, neither of us can ever be touching grass at the same time. Because then we might miss important developments, like that someone fucking shot at Trump. So, because this segment is about the intersection of politics and social media, I think the best place for our discussion to kind of go are how this played out on Twitter specifically. A lot of people are calling it one of Twitter's best days, alongside the queen dying, Trump getting COVID. Twitter's best days are always like a little dark and fucked up.
That's what makes it the best.
I don't think anything
comedy is tragedy plus time.
Yeah, or tragedy plus, like, literally it's happening this exact minute. Oh my God, this is crazy.
comedy is tragedy plus tweets.
Yeah. I don't think anything beats the day that Trump got COVID. But it was crazy to see the immediacy of people posting, like, jokes on Twitter. It is funny that this came after public likes went away. I think that that's for the best.
So that, like, politicians can't see, or we can't see who's liking what.
Yeah.
Tweets.
Yeah.
Pretty funny. Yeah.
Did you have any favorite, like, jokes that stuck out to you? If you don't want to say them, that's totally fine.
I don't know if it was one of Twitter's best days, but it was a day where what people go to Twitter for, like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, when it's in its best moments. I think Trump getting COVID was pretty funny because it was unexpected in the middle of the night. I think Montgomery Brawl during the Black Lives Matter protests where people looting that Target or, you know, whatever, rioting that Target. There was just this woman who was stabbing people in the wheelchair. And then more and more things kept coming out about her. It's like, she can walk. She's 30 years old. All this stuff, like, that was a big moment for me of, like, being on the internet and discovering that. I don't think that was this, but this was nice. So one of my favorite ones was, like, Sarah Hoggy's tweet that said, don't get your ears pierced at Claire's. Because Trump, you know, the bully, you know.
It pierced his ear. You know, when he's okay.
Yeah.
He survived.
Then a lot of Melania centered, like, her laughing or being upset that the bullet missed. You know, my third favorite thing, which I put in the newsletter, was that immediately Elon said, well, people try to kill me too.
I know.
And, like,
Elon Musk immediately saying, I actually have been, people have tried to kill me. I'm like, okay, just the worst person in the world. I will say this came like a day later, but Melania's response really did make me laugh because,
yeah,
number one, it feels very ChatGPT to me. That's not an accusation. I'm just saying it does feel like she wrote, like, write a response from a first lady to a husband who was almost assassinated, whatever. But her part of her message was it was like this thing of, like, they tried to shut down his joy, his laughter, his love of music.
Can you read a quote? Sorry. Could you read some of it in her accent?
I will. I will pull it up because I actually retweeted it from the Go Trust Grass account and said it's giving ChatGPT. Okay, so this is the line that really made me laugh. I have to get into my Melania voice. Who cares about Christmas stuff? Okay. A monster who recognized my husband as an inhuman political machine attempted to wring out Donald's passion, his laughter, his ingenuity, love of music, and inspiration. The core facets of my husband's life, his human side, were buried below the political machine. So what makes me laugh about that so much is this mention of his love of music, because as someone who, Emily knows, we had to follow politics every fucking second of every day on our last podcast.
Yes.
The only music that Donald Trump is, like, truly known to love and that is deeply associated with him, I'm not talking about, like, shit he plays at his rallies, like Kid Rock or whatever, like, no. Three Doors Down. I'm talking about music that Donald Trump is consistently known to listen to is the Phantom of the Opera soundtrack. He, I think it was either, like, one of the really bad days for him, either like right after Biden's inauguration or when he was indicted, one of those days, reports came out that he was driving his golf cart around Mar-a-Lago, blasting the Phantom of the Opera soundtrack as he, like,
that's so funny,
madly drove around.
That's so funny.
There was a video that came out a couple months ago of him at Mar-a-Lago, and he's, like, standing on a platform, and this woman is standing, like, 1 foot away from him, and she's singing Phantom of the Opera at him. He loves Phantom of the Opera. And so when she says his love of music, she is talking pretty much about Phantom of the Opera, which does make me laugh.
There's something dark there about, like, you know, him not feeling like he's whatever. Anyway,
yeah, he's, I don't know anything about Phantom of the Opera. Whatever. I just think it contributes to this idea that he's, like, the ultimate 80s New York figure, because Phantom of the Opera premiered in 1986 in New York, and I feel like that's when Trump was, like, truly trumping. Yeah, like, trumping at his Trumpiest, like, in his prime of his life.
It's funny, like, how Obama releases a playlist or, like, his songs of the year every year, if Trump does, and it's all Phantom of the Opera.
It's just Phantom of the Opera, the soundtrack, every year.
It's crazy. It's really funny.
He fucking loves Phantom of the Opera. Okay, so the second kind of sentiment that I kept seeing, because, like, okay, Donald Trump gets shot at. We know he's okay immediately, but also the vibe is definitely like, oh, that's really bad. Like, it's not great. It's not a great development that this has happened. So the people are posting a lot of jokes, etc. I personally did not like a ton of stuff, even in private. I was just like keeping it to the group chat, I guess I would say. But this sentiment kept coming up of like, should you post these jokes? Is the FBI going to come knocking at your door? I kept seeing like different people posting like, hey guys, might not be best to post all of your thoughts today, or like some of y'all are going to get a visit. And I personally don't think I would publicly post jokes about it. Not that I don't think they're funny or that anyone can joke about it, but I mean, we do know people who have joked about this very thing and the FBI came to their house, and I just don't need that kind of heat.
A friend joked about like blowing something up, and yeah, something went to their, but then the FBI, the whole point of that story was like, the FBI knew it was a joke.
So but they still go to your house.
They still will go to your house. Yeah, I'm like, the things where it's like, some of it, it's just by nature of the joke of like finding, like, don't get your ears pierced at Claire's, or like Melania's mad, like the whatever things, like I feel a little bit less strong about, or like, yeah, that's fine to me.
Yeah.
But the stuff about like, shouldn't miss, or like, damn, or like, I'm gonna do it next time. Like, guys, like, I feel uncomfortable. And like, I'm also just like, even if he's deeply fucked up and wouldn't piss on me if I was on fire, he is still a human being. Like, I'm just not gonna, like, I'm just not that kind of person who wants anyone dead.
Yeah.
Like,
and we've said many times, like, on the podcast, Go Touch Grass is an anti-murder podcast. We do not endorse murder. Anybody, it wasn't right for Gypsy Rose to murder. It's not right. You shouldn't murder Trump. Like, it's not. We're anti-murder.
We don't endorse.
We do not endorse murder of anyone.
Bravely anti-murder.
We will boldly come out as against murdering kind of anybody.
Yeah,
for me, I'm just like, same vibe. I'm just like a little uncomfortable saying that about anybody. And then also, again, I don't want the FBI even to like procedurally come to my house. Also, conservatives are in a really crazy place. I don't need them to find a joke tweet and now I'm being doxxed and they're going crazy. Yeah. Even though they say horrific. If this happened to Joe Biden, they would be saying like, oh, actually the most fucked up stuff. I mean, when Nancy Pelosi's husband got attacked, they were like, it was his gay lover. Like, they're sick people.
But and like, it wasn't just like stupid people on the internet. It was like news figures.
Yeah.
Conservative news figures saying that.
I think like fucking people in the house were saying it. Like, you've got to be kidding me. So, but we can't always live by their standards, though. Every day I wonder if we need to go high when they go low.
we need to be getting lower a little bit.
When they go low, we go like a little higher, but not like totally high.
Yeah.
I do feel like it is a day that will live in infamy online. I would suggest keeping your spiciest takes to the group chat. That's certainly what I did. I mean, this guy from Tenacious D, I don't know if you've seen this, but he joked about like, oh, he shouldn't have missed. It's not Jack Black. It's like the other guy in Tenacious D. They were doing a show and he made that joke and he has lost all of his reps. The tour's canceled. Like, it's
what?
Oh, yeah. It's like not good at all for him. It's not good. So
losing your reps.
I know. It's like, that's going to blow over. It's Tenacious D. Like, people aren't going to be thinking about it. But also, it's such like a heightened and intense time. Like, MSNBC took Morning Joe off the air just because like conservatives don't like Morning Joe. It's like unclear why they did it. But like the day after Trump got shot, like Morning Joe didn't air. So people are very afraid.
Doing weird shit, yeah.
Yeah, people are having a lot of reactions. And that's fair. Someone did try to assassinate a political candidate who was the president and might be
We don't want to set that precedent of like, that's why I wouldn't say anything like that, because I'm like, I think whether how you feel about someone, like, they don't deserve to die. And like, I don't even think it's funny to joke like that. But
I will say my favorite, like, celebrity response is that Rachel Levis, Raquel from Vanderpump Rules, posted herself being like, guys, I just got the news. And I'm like, Raquel, stand down. We all need to hear. Raquel, it's okay. Like, you do not need to make a statement. Okay, is that enough polititiktok? It's bad, guys. Definitely don't shoot anybody. Don't shoot political figures.
Register to vote, guys.
Please. Oh my god. Pokemon, go to the polls. Guys, it's not good.
Pokemon, go to the polls.
We're actually recording this on the anniversary of Pokemon Go to the polls. I saw that on Twitter today.
Important day in history.
That was an important day on Twitter as well. Pokemon, go to the polls.
Well, and people did it. So,
people did, but they didn't go to the Pokemon, go to the polls in the right places. And so we need people in certain swing states do need to Pokemon, go to the polls, really. And that's our stance. Should we get into Grasshole?
Absolutely. Let's fucking do it.
All right, we're mercifully headed back to wedding TikTok. Thank God.
Oh my God.
A much less fraught place. So this week's Grasshole is a person who has honestly, like, this has been like a low unfolding drama over several weeks that is just constantly being fed into my FYP. Today we are talking about the Sepia Bride. Millie, has Sepia Bride made it into your FYP at all?
It absolutely has not. Only known it because you've been talking about it.
Because I've been saying we need to talk about the Sepia Bride. Today is the day. Our Grasshole is none other than Alexandra Weinstein at Alex and J5, a.k.a. Sepia Bride. So this drama starts with Weinstein, who got married in Anguilla in November of 2023. And basically, she took to TikTok at the beginning of this month to post about her experience with her wedding photographer. And she titled this video, Wedding Photographer Horror Experience. And it's all about her displeasure with her wedding photos, which are, as you have guessed, sepia-toned. The videos are very long and annoying, so I'm going to summarize. Basically, at first, Weinstein loved her photos, which she paid $8,000 for, which is a very high amount for wedding photos. That is a lot. I don't know if that's because this was a destination wedding. It seemed like this photographer, well, I know from doing this that the photographer also did like the rehearsal dinner and stuff, but $8,000 is a lot for your photos.
It's probably she had to like fly them out, put them up in a hotel, and they had to work all weekend.
Yeah, there's probably, and I'm sure she had like a second shooter and all that stuff, but even still, that's a high price for wedding photos. So Weinstein discovered her photographer on Instagram, and the bio of this photographer does read golden and genuine love stories. And this photographer's vibe is sepia tone. That's literally what she does. That's how she advertises herself. So, and Weinstein liked that initially. That's why she chose her. But she said that after a month of looking at her photos, she felt like something was, quote, off. And so here's another quote from her. I'm staring at the solo pictures of me and I'm like, I kind of look really pale and my makeup isn't showing at all. My hair has these red highlights in it and I look extremely dull. So this is a big deal because she is a makeup artist and she did her own makeup. So like the makeup not popping, I understand why that is a big deal to her. So Millie, in our doc, I have some photos for you. She said that, so the photographer did the night before photos, and she likes those photos. So these first pictures you're going to see of her in the little blue Jeep and her husband sitting in front of the sea, those are the pictures that she liked. Do you see them?
Yes.
And there's definitely a sepia tone, correct?
Yeah, it's a little dark, but whatever. It, like, kind of mutes the contrast of the, like, bright blue punch buggy and, like, makes it look more earthy.
Yeah.
Because they're warm. In outdoors.
Yeah, it's, like, warm.
Warm, exactly.
Yeah. So those are the photos that she said that she liked. But if you scroll down a little more, we get the wedding day photos. And she did not like these. So this first one you're going to see of her solo, this is the one where she said, like, her makeup looks not good. She doesn't like her cheek. She's just not happy. She says it makes her teeth look yellow. She's just not happy with this photo. And then the one under that, she's also not happy with, because the in the background, you can see that the ocean and the sky are like almost the same color. And in her video, she compares that to just like random iPhone photos of the day. And she's like, it was overcast, but like you could see the ocean. So she's just not happy with the editing on the photos. Yeah, other complaints, her teeth looked yellow. She thinks her under eyes look dark, etc. So at this point, she talks to the photographer about doing a re-edit, which the photographer does, but she's still unhappy. So then she, and this is a direct quote from her, came to the conclusion that I needed to reach out to her, that some of the edits felt like a preset that had been copy and pasted, and I wasn't happy whatsoever. So this is one of like the big discourses that come out of this, is that people are like, this photographer clearly has like a sepia preset that she uses, and she wasn't like adjusting it properly for the different photos, which like, I guess it's normal for photographers to have presets that they use in editing that are their style. But like, as a photographer, you should be kind of like adjusting them for like the photo itself, which people are saying like, oh, we don't think she's doing that. So this is when Sepia Bride acquires some of the raw photos of the wedding, and she realizes that she significantly prefers the raws. So if you can see in the doc, this is a side-by-side of the photo that she received and the raw photo that she, like, lightly edited herself. Left is the photo she received. Right is the raw. I mean, I will admit that I do think the other one looks a lot better.
Yeah, the one that she edited does look better. The other pictures, I don't like mine so much. But the one, yeah, like you could see the green of the trees. Like it does look.
Yeah, but see, and that's like kind of my thing is I'm like, no, I totally agree. I don't really love the sepia, but also like you hired a photographer whose whole thing is doing sepia tone photos. Her ad, like she literally says like golden moments. She puts a gold filter on all of her shit. So Here's where the big battle begins. And the discourse like really starts going, because at this point, Sepia Bride asks the photographer if she can have the raws, not all of them, but like some of them, to edit for herself for her wedding album. And the photographer is like, no, you knew my style when you hired me. And if you want the raws, that's another $4,000. Because photographers are like very precious about their raws. This is what I've learned watching Sepia Gate unfold. Because it's like the photo and how it's edited, all of that is their art. And they don't want to give out photos that haven't been edited by them in the way that they see as their art. Like, it's basically like in the mind of a photographer, it's like giving unfinished work out and then having someone either like finish it for you in a way that maybe isn't like your style, or just put the unfinished work out there and you wouldn't want your name associated with that. So there's just like, there's an artistic ownership over the raws that photographers are like, you typically don't give them out. This
good to know.
Yeah, that's something worth knowing for sure.
Yeah.
So this sparks a ton of discourse in the comments. And like, there's really no consensus on this. Some people are very much in the camp of like, brides should get whatever they want. It's your wedding. You paid her $8,000. She should give you the fucking raws. You're the bride. Brides are queens for the day. Then a lot of photographers get in and are like, absolutely not. I'd never give someone my raws. Her editing is consistent with her style. You hired her for this style. Go kick rocks. And then there are other photographers who weigh in who are kind of in the middle and are like, asking for raws is tough. And you did hire her for this style. But at that price point and just as a professional wedding photographer, I would work with you a little bit more to like get the photos to an edit that you actually enjoy and like. So of those three, where do you feel that you come down?
I feel like I'm in the latest one, which is like, if people don't like raws, whatever, but it's also like, maybe not charging half of what you originally charged, but a $500 charge could be whatever. Because yeah, $8,000 is a lot. It's so funny. I'm staying at my friend's house, and one of my friends that is also at my friend's house from college is a wedding photographer, and I'm dying to ask him. He's a really, really good wedding photographer. He goes around the world shooting weddings. And I'm going to fucking ask him what he thinks about this.
You will have,
and I will report back an update.
Please do. Because yeah, that's kind of, I kind of come down in the third camp too, where it's like, I think that you as the photographer, as annoying as it is, just go in and like lighten your presets by a bunch. It's probably not going to be work that you're going to use on your portfolio. It might not be like how you would like it, but this bride did pay you $8,000. But also like, I don't think that she should have to just give up all the raws if that's not what she's comfortable with. And I do feel like there is onus on the bride of like, you're mad at this person for doing what they do, and you should have just hired a photographer. If what she really likes is this photo that's on the right, then you just needed a different photographer that wasn't going to be sepia tone photographer.
Yes.
So I'm watching all of this play out on my FYP. And at this point, I'm kind of sepia bride neutral. I see both sides, etc. But what shifts this into grasshole territory for me is that Alexandra continues to post about this. Unlike Olivia Culpo, the reason Olivia Culpo is not our grasshole is because it's really just one post. Alexandra posts about this at a glance, from what I could see, 36 more times. And the fifth video she posted was captioned "My Final Thoughts," which I think is very funny because then she goes on to post 30 more videos.
That's insane.
And that's just the ones that I could tell from the caption or like the top text were about this. There were other videos in her feed, and I was just like, I can't watch all these videos. So it could potentially be more videos and stories that are like now archived. And she's like in the comments, like she has become sepia bride and she is embracing her like status as sepia bride. But which is, you know, whatever, fine, get your engagement. But there is another person on the other end of this, and that brings us to Hannah Elise with an E, photography.
Wow.
Yeah. Elise with an E has come back. Hannah Elise is the photographer behind all of this, and she stays quiet for a really fucking long time, but eventually, like 2 weeks in, she goes on some guy's podcast to tell her side, and basically she's like, I never imagined in a million years this would happen. We did a ton of pre-phone calls. She said that she thought she and the bride were vibing. They chatted a bunch beforehand. One of her big points was that she was like seeing all these people weigh in and give advice and be like, see, this is why you need to pre-screen people. This is why you need to like talk to your people beforehand and do all this stuff. She's like, we did all of that stuff. I'm a professional. She's like, I had no hint going into this that like, we were not going to see eye to eye on these photos at all. I feel like probably as a wedding vendor, you can tell when you have someone who's going to be a pain in your ass usually. And I think her thing was like, I did not expect this person to do what she did and like bring it online and have it be this huge viral thing. But also she kind of had this vibe of like, this shit also happens in the industry. Like, it's an artistic process. And sometimes you don't see eye to eye with people, and that's part of it. And she was like, there was something about how like, oh, you need to make sure you give people full galleries, which is definitely something my wedding photographer did. Like, once we contacted her, she would show us the full gallery of a wedding so that you could see like all of the photos. And she was like, yeah, I did that. I gave her my full galleries. We did all the pre-planning. It's just when push came to shove, she decided she didn't actually like my style. So the response to this podcast is pretty positive. Most people were like, Hannah Elise came off very like polished and gracious and unpetty, specifically because she kept it offline for so long. Meanwhile, Sepia Bride is getting into it in the comments with people. She's fighting with these photographers because this has like sparked a ton of like photographer commentary, right? So she's like, she's basically posting this like, with this like, I'm unbothered vibe that always means, as Gypsy Rose would say, you are panini pressed.
Panini pressed.
she's giving panini pressed. So a couple of the videos that I saw that have this energy is like, one is just like her blowing a kiss with the text, zero followers, zero following, zero post. Basically her being like, you're nobody and I like have, I'm Sepia Bride, like, mwah, like whatever, trolls. One of them is her in a car with audio of past guest Caleb Heron saying, you have massively fucked me over. I will never think of you the same. Enjoy your bad karma. And the text, all the photographers talking about me on Threads. And I'm like, girl, you cannot.
Not Threads.
No, you cannot be getting worried about what's being said about you on Threads.
Like, not Threads.
Not, don't bring Threads into this, okay? Not Threads. Anything but Threads.
Anything but Threads, not the dweeb site.
Literally. I mean, it's like Threads is literally where nerds go to argue about stuff like this. Like, you cannot be talking about fucking Threads. And then also, she takes this tone that I really didn't like, where she starts responding to photographers who are like, who don't agree with her, who side with the photographer. Yeah. And she's like, you know, this is just advice, but like other brides are going to see you in my comments not agreeing with me and they're not going to hire you.
Interesting. So it's like, would they do that though? Like, like if you want to hire a photographer and then are you going to go to like things that they've commented? Like, I just don't think that's possible. You go to the pictures and the price.
Exactly. Not like, are you going to make a shit list of photographers and be like, okay, these are all the photographers who commented on Sepia Bride and didn't agree with Sepia Bride. Like, I will not be working with them. Like, that's crazy. The way I found my wedding photographer is that I looked at another friend's wedding photos that I liked. Shout out Alex French and Sarah Grace Welburn. And I looked at their wedding and I said, this looks like a wedding that's going to cost roughly what my wedding is going to cost. And then I contacted her and we made a deal. I cannot imagine being like, what have you commented on? What have you said? What have you said?
How do
about
you
other
feel
rides?
About?
Yeah. Like I, and again, also I contacted her because I liked her style and I liked the way she edits photos. If I didn't like that style, then I would not have reached out to her, which like if she did sepia tone photos, I probably wouldn't have reached out because I would have been like, oh, that's so great for a great. That's so great for Alex and Sarah Grace. I don't love sepia, so I'm not going to hire a sepia photographer who advertises herself as like golden moments.
Yeah, I think I was kind of team neutral, like you were saying, until the more posting, because I'm like, 4,000 is crazy.
Yeah.
I would have charged like 500 because, yeah, there is like that other picture just didn't look as good. But
yeah,
at the same time, you can't be posting through it. Just don't post through it. Sometimes people will have a good point and then they post through it and they fuck it up.
That's exactly it. So it's like, I'm not even not on Sepia Bride's side in the battle. What I'm saying is you posted too much. You did. Yeah. You did too much. You took it too far. And for that reason, I must say, Sepia Bride, go touch grass.
Go touch grass.
Wow.
Wow.
Our first virtual episode recorded in the can.
Woof. In the can. Woof. Voice raspy.
Voice raspy.
We're doing it, guys.
Millie needs to rest. Guys, we are so excited. The next like four episodes you're going to hear are our episodes that we're recording out in LA. They're going to be so amazing.
They're going to be so good.
You can follow me at Pandalise on Instagram. You can follow me at Elise Navidad on TikTok. And if you are in New York and you would like to see me live, I am doing my live show, The Roast of Your Teenage Self, again here in Brooklyn. Before I go away to Warsaw, come see me before I'm changed forever by the Eras Tour.
Yes.
It's at Littlefield in Brooklyn at 8 p.m. on July 26th. I would love to see you all there.
I'll be doing some shows in L.A. You can follow me at Millie Tamaris on Twitter and at Millie _ Tamaris on Instagram and TikTok. I have a show in Spanish on the 19th at the Pack Theater. And I'll be hitting you guys up with more shows and more things to do and more stuff. And yeah, guys, we love you. Thank you for sticking through us. We're working so hard to bring you this.
We're working so hard. Millie could have had, she had every right to say, I can't record today. But she did it.
But I did it.
You can follow this podcast everywhere on at Go Touch Grass Pod. And until next time.
Go touch grass.
It's harder to do in unison. Virtual.
Yeah, no, and we're not. Yeah, it's better.
It is, but go touch grass.
Yeah.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.